This is Guy Bogart, as E. Whiting of Boston in his column said, the cat's attorney, presenting the case of our cats. Perhaps you remember recently in the reading from Alan DeVoe, he mentions the naturalist Ernest Harold Baines, who tamed the two timber wolves. As Mr. DeVoe put it, quote, he made pets, or guests, as he liked to call them, with a sensitive naturalist dislike of the patronizing quality in there. Seeking better conditions for animals, there are too many big jobs to start a crusade to call our animal pals pets. We have pretty well broken from the term alley cats, and when we use it now, its old context is softened at least. Domestic shorthairs, the ordinary cat, and such terms are used. The term pet is something of the spirit in which a man once thought that the earth and the stars and the sun and the animals and plants were created for him as the Lord of the universe. God loved man and tolerated the so-called lesser creations made for the benefit of man. Well, that idea pretty well faded with a century or so of science, and we no longer think of the moon as something created for the amusement and comfort of man when his sun, another of the creations made for him, is resting. A greater concept is gaining, though ghosts of the old arrogance survive. Well, I don't care to make an issue of it, but that term pets is a bit of condescension. I'll keep on using it from habit, but I believe even though we speak of these animals about us as pets, there will be a closer and more expanded context in the term. It was not in a poetic or figurative sense that St. Francis of Assisi called his fellow creatures brothers and sisters. He had the mystic gift of knowing that they are our brothers and sisters. The cat has done much to create the spirit of being folks. No wonder the concept of the centaur among the ancients and the early Western cowboy had that close, intimate feeling of merging with his horse. Cat lovers have felt the personality of their feline brothers and sisters, and there is a growing consciousness on the part of Christians and of other great religions that there are no divisions in life. Thinkers long ago learned that there is no fundamental superiority in any of the races of mankind over the others. We have a long way to go toward human brotherhood, yet by the same token, it's a far cry from the early days when the words stranger and enemy were synonymous. How deeply do we really understand the lines of Coolidge we so often quote, for the dear God who loveth us, he made and loveth all. Do you not see that to God or nature or whatever you choose to call creation could not ordain you as the master of any animal, but only its brother? The really great of the world are humble. So forget that you are human and the cat is, quote, an animal. We are each, along with all forms of life, children of creation. I very much believe that I have a soul, but equally do I believe that my cats have souls and that we, again in common with all other forms of life, are brothers and sisters in one common creation. No, I'm not asking you to quit saying pets, and I'll keep on saying it, but never again in its old sense. Not that I have ever felt a godlike superiority to my cats. How much better Ernest Howard Baines' expression of guests. Cats have taught the race a great lesson in this respect. We have called them pets, but treated them as guests, for the cat is the one untamed form of life, and it accepts us only on terms of equality. Believe me, your cat does not think itself inferior to you, and why should it? Not everyone, of course, thinks of the cat even as a remote pet. One of the perpetual vigilances we have to maintain is a matter of taxation and licensing. For example, every year, Henry F. Long of Massachusetts gets a large amount of publicity and newspaper ribbing by his appeals to all boards of assessors to cash in on the cat through taxation. David Hearn once stated in the Boston Traveler that, quote, Long has said again and again that cats should be made to pay their fair share of the cost of government. They are no better than anyone else. In fact, they are no better than television sets, and long know that TV is worth $4.50 a year to the state's coffers. Long would never try to get blood from a stone unless the stone happened to have a little blood. He annually reminds all boards of assessors they are missing a good thing, unquote. Long insists it's right in the books. Cats can be taxed as long as any other tangible property, unquote. The Traveler sent its reporter to assessors in greater Boston communities. N. Gordon Nickerson of Quincy, assessor, declared, The cat tax is the most ridiculous suggestion Henry has made up to the present time. Wonder how Henry would go about assessing cats, unquote. Incidentally, Mr. Nickerson thought it might reduce the cat population. It wouldn't. There'd just be more unwanted strays as people abandon their cats to avoid taxation. Same is true in the matter of licensing. The Cambridge assessors, recognizing the high place cats have in the home, have no intention of making them common taxpayers. They call attention that Long once suggested intravenous feeding in hospital be taxed under the meals tax law. The Belmont assessor opined that if you start assessing cats, how about rabbits, lovebirds, parakeets, canaries, and all the other pets? In Brookline, it was asserted, there are many things the office has to do that are more important than counting alley cats. And in Holbrook, most of our cats are alley cats. We'd have an awful time establishing their value. One assessor said, I never comment on Mr. Long. We do not need to fear, I feel sure, that Mr. Long's proposal to assess cats will get anywhere, but its agitation might egg on the perpetual battle for licensing of cats. It's been a long time since I spoke of that, and I think it was when the big fight was being waged when the Los Angeles City Council was trying to put over a cat license ordinance. Likely I'll come back in detail on that at some later time. For here is a matter that has been before the public for at least several generations and is not likely to end soon. Sometime I'll give a summary showing why it never has and cannot be a successful mode of raising taxes. I understand some of our California communities at this time have such ordinance. It's always bobbing up. Miss Gertrude Charney, founder, president, and promoter of the so-called Friends of the Birds, three times in California and four times in Illinois, defeated before the state legislators in her marauding cat bills, is now seriously considering an approach to the 1955 session in Sacramento along the lines of licensing all cats by the state and of compelling all cats outside their own yards to be on leashes. In fact, she has tried to interest an English manufacturer of collars and leashes to contact all cat leaders in the USA to get them accustomed to the idea of a leash. The question of licensing will take a more intensive fight than that of the marauding cat, so be prepared for a 1955 battle royal in Sacramento over licensing. It is not revenue with Miss Charney. What she wants is the extermination of cats, I fear. She does not state this, like the old Chicago banker Sayre, who paid a bonus for every cat killed, and had a standing offer to the person who, as he expressed it, killed the last nasty cat on earth. Let's not forget that one Illinois legislature did pass Miss Charney's marauding cat bill, only to have it vetoed by Edla E. Stevenson. We're going to appeal to you cat lovers for some very active work if this licensing issue comes up next year. You have a year to make the acquaintance of your assemblymen and state senators. It is a good civic matter anyway to know them. As cat lovers, you have another good reason, a veritable duty to get acquainted with these folks who represent you in Sacramento. When you write and talk to a legislator who knows you, it really means something, a lot more than when your letter is just another from an unknown. You'd be surprised to know how interesting it is getting acquainted with your officers. Won't you do it for your cat's sake? Well, that's enough of that. Here's a little poem enclosed in a letter from Dr. Ida M. Mellon of Brooklyn. Pray. Love comes on velvet-padded paws to pierce warm flesh with tiger claws and I, with wounds too lightly read, cringe at the sound of that soft tread, Eleanor Hammond. It is a poetic idea of the hurt of love, as Pamela Mason wrote in The Cats in Our Lives, we should not have cats unless we want to have our hearts broken. Well, yes, but why not balance the sorrow with the happiness, sorrow in the death of your pet, or should I say guest, yet overcome that regret by sweet memories of happy hours together? Incidentally, the Masons have always taken that attitude, and to this day they have plenty of cats. George MacDonald once wrote, oh, the hurt, and the hurt of love. I think it would have been equally true and equally poetic if it could have been written, oh, the joy and the joy and the joy of love. Our cats, our folks, our contacts, isn't it mainly in our outlook? It seems to me that you and I are sent into life to walk together the silent paths of the soul and the noisy avenues of trade, together in a far goal, yet alone in paths that each must enter in the search for the Christ. At quiet oases our paths cross for an hour as we commune, encircling a common campfire. We weave into the fabric of the present, you and I and our cats, the gold of the dawn, for the gossamer threads of morn must have the pregnant soil of our material present in which to grow a pattern of beauty and brotherhood. You and I need not worry that physical pain and mental want clear the way for the new order in the womb of time, for always will we be returning to other dawns in world evolution. Joy and sorrow are balanced in life, and it is ours to remember the pleasant even in the hour of our disappointment. And I invite you to be ever joyous with me. The sunshine of summer unlocks the sweet magic of fruit only through the anguish of winter frosts, and we live for the fruitage of experience. Yes, it seems to me that life is joyous, and we are beams of God playing in the gardens of earth the holy game of life. And in those gardens play and laugh and weep and rejoice with us all we have ever loved and all who have ever worshipped with us at the shrine of understanding. Only through fields of service may I find my way to God, for surely service is love in action. This is service to our fellow men and to the cats of the hearth, who also are children of life, even as we. Love your cat unashamedly. Treat it truly as a guest in your home and a pal in your heart and a sweet part of eternity in your soul. I am the cat. Serve me, love me, play with me, enjoy me, live with me, and I repay. I am the cat, with claws and fangs when I must, with purrs and caresses when I may. Tiger and cherub I walk with folks, yet only in terms of equality. Subservient to none, I am companion to man. I am love and beauty, fidelity and felicity. I am the cat. This is Guy Bogart with love and joy to you and your guests in fur. Happy purrs.